The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour One Podcast.
And we welcome you to another day, and already there is a lot happening with the reaction from yesterday, more problems in baseball, and a late-breaking story that is literally just developing where Mark Emmert, the head of the NCAA, has spoken out. He just finished an interview with Heather Dinich, and these are some of the headlines. He says he believes that a delayed start to the college football season will be necessary, and a smaller number of games will likely happen. He also scoffed at the idea of a czar for college football, and everybody that has presented the position of a czar is a direct shot at him. He said that's utterly realistic, and it surely doesn't fit college sports. And many more comments from Mark Emmert. Now, remember, Mark Emmert does not rule college football. He is the president of the NCAA, which governs intercollegiate athletics and sets guidelines, but he has no actual power. But he does have a big stick, and as president of the NCAA, when he believes there should be a delayed season and fewer games, it is going to resonate. More on the Emmert interview a little bit later. Let's get to the headlines, and they begin with baseball, and more players from the Miami Marlins, I should say, have tested positive for coronavirus. More games have been canceled. This has been the story in sports for about the last 36 hours, and it is a big one, and everybody, and I mean everybody, is watching this. Meanwhile, NFL camps are opening, so we're watching those very closely as well. And talk about a story that could very well resonate in college football. Number of players, including Dante Hightower, the former Alabama player, have opted out for playing for New England. I believe that's at least five, maybe six players from New England. And you see Brandon Bowen, Brantley from Florida, Guidry from Mississippi State. I mentioned Hightower, Andre Smith, another Alabama All-American, Chance Warmack announced yesterday. There is a concern in college athletics that this could trickle down, and I would agree with that concern. The young players who look up to all these gentlemen are saying to themselves, I know it's probably not that safe here either. I'm getting out. So keep your eye on that story. We've seen very few players announce that they are not going to play college football, but I would expect more to happen. So why are some sports working and some not? Well, as you know, the NBA has a bubble. Stuart Mandel asking the question, is it time for a bubble in college football? It may be time, but that train has already pulled out of the station. And Mark Emmert, in the interview with Heather, saying it is simply not realistic or appropriate. Those are his words, not mine. Meanwhile, this is what Mandel proposed for his fake bubble. The ACC in North Carolina, makes sense. Why else would you be located in Charlotte if you weren't in the ACC? The Big Ten in Indianapolis, the Big 12 in Dallas, the Pac-12 in Salt Lake, and the SEC in Atlanta. Missouri looking good with freshmen, and we will hear a little bit more about Missouri later on. There's some optimism there. They need it. I mean, that program was a complete redo after last year when so many things went wrong. But Missouri trying to start over again, and these are some of the guests. David Israel, who was once a coordinating producer on Monday Night Football. Before that, one of the leading sports columnists in the country at the Chicago Tribune and in Los Angeles. He will join us with some strong opinions on the return to sports. Haro, the usual business conversation. Andy Katz, a prominent figure working for NCAA.com. And Eli Drinkwitz joining us as well. So that's where we are. Really busy start. And, you know, again, Emmert's comments that are just breaking as we speak, what do they mean? It's just more pressure because, as we have seen since yesterday, the Big 12 seems to be leading this parade. They just don't seem to care. They're starting. They'll start tomorrow if they can, as long as they get a 12-game season in. A number of teams and schools have already moved up to week zero. But that seems to be the mood over there. The ACC will be heard from tomorrow. Still no word on when the SEC will speak on all of this. And we'll talk about it for the rest of the day and until further notice right here. Let's get to some phone calls as well at 855-242-7285. And we begin with James, who is in Alabama. Hey, James, you're on the air.
Paul, I'm not sure anybody really cares what Mark Emmerich has to say. That's just some more old white men talking. That's not what I called to talk about. I want to offer some comedy relief. Years ago, I was sitting and talking with my lady friend, and she looked at me right in the eye, and she said, "You're the best man I know." Paul, I looked right back at her, and I said, "You don't know many men." Here, I want you to help me with something, Paul. I have this, it's like a ballot. It says ESPN memo, and it says potential second chair. And there are two sides of this thing, and one side says rowdy or alley badger. So tell me, Paul, if you had a second chair, who would you choose, rowdy or alley badger?
Yeah, you know, I've been looking for a co-host of this show for about 25 years, and my answer to you would be I'm going to keep looking.
Okay, so you wouldn't pick rowdy or alley badger?
No, I wouldn't.
Okay, all right, let's go to the other side. Can I have that much time?
You have all the time you need.
Okay. Jim or I-Man? Still no choice? Or
I've noticed a lot of shows, especially where you live, have three-man teams. Yeah, by old station jocks, they have two shows. So
I'd be the third chair, Paul. I mean, well, down on some of the mischief.
But, I don't think I could. I mean, that would be like, you know, Solomon, cutting the baby in half.
Paul,
so
Paul,
so
I don't you think you're going to get us both fired.
I said cutting. So I would probably ask Jim and I-Man to be part of the show just out of courtesy. You know, Jim wouldn't accept. I'd bring I-Man in, and obviously you.
Me and you and I-Man. Now, right. Are we moving to North Carolina? I mean, give me a.
Oh
date.
No! I'm definitely moving back to Birmingham.
You're coming back to Birmingham for
oh,
this?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Is it,
that's for
should
sure.
I mean, how long is this going to take? I mean,
it's not
going to
take long. I'm not even on the show today. I'm out looking for a house.
Okay. In Birmingham, as a matter of fact, I have a nephew that's leaving Gardendale and going to the beach. But I think he's already sold, so that one's out.
Well, yeah, no, Gardendale's a nice area, so I haven't decided what part of town. I mean, I can live anywhere in Alabama. It doesn't matter. I mean, it's a big state, but Birmingham is where my wife is from, so that would probably be where I would land.
Well, are we going to fly in or drive in every day? I mean, you said anywhere in Alabama. I mean,
well, it depends.
It's a pretty good size state, brother.
Yeah, no, I know. I've covered the state pretty well. We're probably going to be in the central Alabama, so let's go with Birmingham to start, okay?
Okay,
hey, and
so
if the show does well, then maybe I can buy a little one-room condo down on Gulf Shores.
Okay, well, in other words, I want to help you with that real estate.
Okay.
Paul, have a nice day. I'm not out of ideas, but before you cut me off, I'm going to say see you later.
Okay, James. Pat is up next in Georgia. Hello, Pat.
Hey, Paul, thank you. I want to ask your opinion about something.
And, okay.
Think about the question because I'm asking it in an odd sort of way. In your opinion, what is the most likely worst ever case scenario for college football this year?
So when you say, you're talking about the worst thing that could happen?
Of all the worst things that could happen to college football, what in your mind right now, especially with the news today?
Yeah, I think it's pretty. I hate to even go there, but you asked a question and you want an answer. I think starting the season and having something catastrophic happen.
I would agree with you on that. Who woke up Mark Emmerich?
What's that?
Who woke up Mark Emmerich for him to say what he said today.
Oh, well, that was Heather Dinich interviewed him this afternoon.
Yeah, but somebody had to wake him up, right?
Well, you know, listen, I've been a critic of Mark Emmert. I mean, Mark Emmert's a smart guy. He's a former president, chancellor at LSU and at the University of Washington. He's just gotten lazy in his job, and instead of doing anything, he's just making the $2.5 to $3 million a year by living off the fat of the land. But I will tell you, this is the third or fourth time Mark Emmert has said what he did today. I don't think this is my opinion. I couldn't remember the last time I had a conversation with Mark Emmert. I think I saw him at a football game a couple of years ago, and we may have grunted at one another. But I don't think Mark Emmert thinks we should have a college football season. I think that's pretty obvious.
Well, probably so. Now, if the worst case scenario, the most likely worst case scenario is we start the season, let's say, late, and then we have to stop the season, or something like what's happening with the Miami Marlins or worse, are there going to be a lot of lawsuits?
Could. You know, that's the one part of this I've yet to get a straight answer on. And, you know, how much risk are college presidents willing to take? I mean, this isn't deciding whether or not I'm going to catch a virus and maybe get sick, and more than likely not. This is deciding whether to play college football and run the risk of, on your campus, having people die.
And that's one of the reasons why I'm still of the opinion, I think most people in responsible positions who are actually have to make the decision, I truly believe mentally they've already decided the worst case. They've decided we're not going to play football. They're just.
I don't know about. I tell you, Pat, I'm not sure, because I have never seen more arrogance coming out of people in my life than some of these announcements that we get. I mean, what is the sense of announcing games that you have no intention of playing? I mean, this is not. We're not playing chess here. This is serious, real stuff. And you know, from Bob Bowlesby had a comment yesterday that he will be with us in 2 days when we'll get his reaction. We talked to the commissioners, and they all are measured, but on the other hand, they're all saying we're going to find a way to play. Hate to run, we're up against a break. A lot to do on this 4-hour edition of the program. I hope you'll stick around. We are coming right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
We welcome you back and are really glad to have you. A number of guests will start coming along, including Heather Dinich a little bit later on. She interviewed NCAA President Mark Emmert and certainly has as good a handle as anyone out there about what's going on right now in college athletics. So let's check in with Big D in Kentucky. Big D, thanks. Good to have you on.
Hey, Paul. First time caller to your show.
Thank you.
I have a couple points to make. Yesterday I was on hold waiting to get on, but I didn't get it. During yesterday's Padres game, former Major League Baseball player's son, Eduardo Perez, announced that Don Mattingly had admitted that the players knew on Sunday that they had COVID and decided to play.
Right.
Okay, what do you think should be done by Major League Baseball with that?
Well, boy, you give me a great way to answer that question. What shouldn't will be done. Nothing will be done because Major League Baseball management is a total fraud, and you can tell that every time Rob Manfred speaks. I mean, he is completely whitewashing this situation. I heard his interview last night and essentially said nothing. I think there ought to be, you really need to get inside the situation and find out exactly what happened. I think everyone should be investigated. Everyone should be interviewed. And a complete and total report needs to be made because, this is what everyone else is looking at as an example. If college football, and we had an AD on here the other day saying we're looking to MLB as a data point, well, they better get it right. And they clearly aren't getting it right because they rushed to get out there. They had no plan. And I'm afraid they're not the only one without a plan.
Okay. Second thing, regarding your caller yesterday, Ricky, he's kind of out there, the one that was talking about all this Bard's, whatever it was, talking about this isn't real.
Breitbart.
Yes, okay. Here in West Virginia, it's an NBC affiliate, WSAZ. Last week, they had a police officer who went to get tested, and he was in line. The line was long. He couldn't stay. Because he had to go on patrol. And a week later, he got a letter in the mail from the health department that said that he tested positive for COVID-19. There was a 72-year-old lady who did not get her Social Security check, so she called. And the health department had notified the Social Security Administration that she had died of COVID-19, and she was never tested. She didn't have it. Neither one of them did.
Listen, I think this is happening everywhere because there are so many test results trying to be computed. And, in the end, I think it's a tremendous conversation piece. I'm not sure what it means because those are not going on to the numbers that everyone's looking at because they're not real cases. But I agree. They are definitely going on.
I know that.
But Christopher's up next in Alabama. Hey, Christopher, go right ahead.
Paul, how are you doing today, man?
We are doing great.
Fabulous. As a journalist, Paul, you know more than anybody, there's two sides to every story, and then there's the truth. And I've been listening to your show since all this COVID stuff has come out, and you've had all these medical experts come on and medical doctors come on, and they all keep doing the same dog and pony show that wear a mask, social distance, this and that, wash your hands, and nothing to go back to the same till the vaccines come out. Okay, that's what they're all saying, but you've not put anybody on the air to talk about the other side. Okay, I have three friends that would love to come on the show. Okay, the one you know very well, Robert Kennedy Jr. Okay, he's one of the lead attorneys in the world that is going against the vaccine companies. He has a completely, totally different view on what is going on right now. I so encourage you to let him come on, but.
Well, first of all, let me jump in here for a second. I was 2 years ago. I was at a party with Robert Kennedy, and I know him. I mean, I got to know him as well as you can know somebody in an evening, and I have great respect for him, and obviously his whole family, to say the least. And I'm certainly aware of his position on vaccines, and he's been very vocal. I don't have any problem bringing him on. And, I want to say, though, that we did have Alex Berenson on Friday. I don't know if you heard it or not. He's the one who is leading this war against the media. So I am more than happy to have both sides of the story. Other than Robert Kennedy, who else are you suggesting?
Robert Kennedy Jr. would be first and foremost as a lawyer, as a medical doctor. Okay, I've got two medical doctors. Dr. Zach Bush, he's one of the very few medical doctors in the world that's triple certified. Okay?
Okay,
he has a completely totally different stance on this. Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, she's testified before Congress, testified before the CDC about vaccines. There's something completely totally different that's going on, Paul, that you guys are not talking about, and your meanings will not allow you to talk about it. So please, you know, do your
research. Let me ask you a question, because I obviously, you know, knowing Bobby Kennedy and knowing and how this relates to the vaccine, I don't know because I haven't really looked into it. But
let him come on the show.
Well,
go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Do you know Bobby?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
And I can get him to come on the show for you.
Well, I appreciate that.
But your guys won't allow it to happen.
Well, hold on. Christopher.
For 15 years, he's been working on debating anybody regarding vaccines, okay?
Hold on a second.
2 weeks ago,
You just guys were saying that we won't let him on.
You won't. You will, but your guys will not.
Who are my?
The chances of him coming on is 1%. The same amount of chances of you dying of COVID-19. Anything's possible. And God, it would be an amazing thing.
Christopher, I have to ask you this question.
They won't allow him to come on.
No, I want to ask you something here, in all sincerity. Who are these people that won't let Robert Kennedy on our program? I'd like to know who they are.
They are the programmers at ESPN, you know, that's bought and paid for by the pharmaceutical companies. We know this. So they own the company. And Robert will tell you this. Nobody will let him come on and talk about this. Okay, they won't let him do it. For the first time, like I was saying earlier, it's been 15 years he's trying to debate anybody that would talk about
it. Okay, you tell him, and obviously he knows me. That I will. I just want to look into it. I'm not evading it. I know how he feels about vaccines, but I have not heard him talk about this particular issue.
Of course you hadn't. And Paul, is there any way I can get you the interview? You know who Alan Dershowitz is, the attorney for O.J. Simpson, for Jerry Epstein.
Yeah, no, I know who Alan Dershowitz is. Sure.
Okay. 2 weeks ago, the two of them were able to debate. Is there any way I can get you that link? I would love to tweet it to you. Every time I talk to you guys, they always cut me off, and I can't get you information.
Well, you know
who I am. I'm from Fulton, Alabama. The Hobie
Christopher, I know who you are. I know you well. You just tweet it at me, and I'll pick it up. And you tell Robert Kennedy we will work on that. How about that?
Okay, how do I get back in touch with you? Because I don't have your email or phone number anymore.
You probably still do.
Thank you, Paul.
We'll take a break.
Thank you so much, Paul. I really appreciate
it,
man.
You got it. Yeah.
All right. Bye bye.
Feel like a murder mystery here. The Kennedys. We'll take a break. David Israel will join us next. He is going to be allowed on the show without the censors getting in the way. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We welcome you back. Already 30 minutes in, it's been pretty busy with Mark Emmert speaking out today saying he thinks the college football season should start late and be shortened, and the optics are not great at the moment. But that is just the beginning of this story, as the Miami Marlins look like they may be done for the week. There's a lot of aftershocks going on with that. What does it mean to everyone else? NFL camps opening up, 6 Patriots opting out of the season. All of this brings us to our next guest. He is David Israel. I first met him nearly 40 years ago when he was one of the leading sports columnists in America, in Washington, L.A., and I met him when he was at the Chicago Tribune. Since then, he has moved on. Has become an award-winning producer and writer in Hollywood, but someone who has never, he's also worked on Monday Night Football, someone who's never gotten too far from the sports world. David, what a great pleasure to be reconnected again. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you very much. I'm the quintessence of non-essential, so I've been in lockdown for since March 5th. So I'm safe at home with my wife in Los Angeles, and we're going to keep it that way.
Well, I'm glad. And being home gives you time to monitor the ways of your old stomping ground, and that's the sports world. And I know you're not shy about sharing your opinion. So let's start with the baseball situation. And I mean, I'm my head is still spinning trying to figure out exactly what is going on in baseball.
Well, I think Rob Manfred's in exactly the same place you are, and that's a problem because they should have planned for this, and they seem to be taking care of it on an ad hoc basis as if it caught them by surprise. This was inevitable that at least one team was going to be severely afflicted by the coronavirus, and they don't seem to have a plan for it. They have canceled the games through this week. The next scheduled Marlins game is now Monday. But I don't know, and the Nationals, by the way, who were supposed to play them at some point, obviously they're in the same division, have said that they won't go. The team voted not to go to Miami, and they're the defending world champions. The Yankees-Phillies series was called off, and instead the Yankees are going to be playing Baltimore, who was supposed to be playing Miami, I think. They're going to be playing Baltimore a couple of games. So this, they're really doing this on the fly. Speaking of which, travel is an essential part of all this if they're not in a bubble. What flight crew is going to be willing to get in an aluminum tube with recycled air with a team that might be contagious? How can you ask a flight crew to do that? So how do these teams start getting anywhere? There's so many dominoes in this line. I mean, it's way more than one box full, and I don't know how many are going to fall, and how any of these sports can really continue with business as somewhat usual.
David, I know you spent a lot of time in Hollywood dealing with reality shows, but I'm not sure this one is even.
I've done dramas actually.
This one's even believable, is it?
Yeah, actually, I believe it or not, I did a miniseries years and years and years ago, based on a John Nance novel called Pandora's Clock, which was about the Ebola virus getting onto a 747 that would then take it, you know, from Frankfurt, Germany to the United States. And you know, it was a two-hour thing. Richard Dean Anderson was in it, Robert Guillaume, Bob Loggia, and a lot of other really good actors. It was a good cast. This was in 1996, and it sort of, you know, it prefigured this in a weird way, I, you know, I'm not going to bother telling you the plot, but It all worked out well, but there were a lot of fighter jets involved in some Russian finagling. So the CIA got involved. I don't think we need to use Russian fighter jets and the CIA to figure out that sports probably should just cash its checks and go home until 2021. It's just, there's just no way to keep players, coaches, other people affiliated with the team safe. And that should be the first priority. And as much as I've OD'd on baseball since last Thursday, whenever they started playing. I watched the Yankees, I watched the Dodgers, I watched games as they were on, Padres, and I have the package. And it, you know, and I found it obviously really edifying. But that's not a good enough reason to jeopardize careers and lives, and that's what they're doing. And I think, look what's going on in football now. Six Patriots already begged out. Patriots. These are guys who are really dedicated. They're veterans who've played for Belichick. And they've taken the opt-out, which pays them $350,000 this season not to play because of coronavirus. And today was the first day the players could do that, by the way. So how many more are going to follow? You know, we're worried about a college football season. Don't worry. If the NFL plays, it's going to be a college football season because the pros aren't going to be there. It's going to be all rookies. You know, it's this is kind of crazy, I think. It's irresponsible.
David Israel with us, and which brings me to college football. You went to school, of course, at Northwestern. You covered Notre Dame. You covered all the biggest college football stories of that era.
Yes.
And I know you follow it very closely. So let's come to our neighborhood for a second, David, and try to figure all of this out. Because every time we talk to an AD, a commissioner, and we talk to them all, everyone says the same thing. We're playing, and we'll figure it out. And the most important thing, of course, is the safety of our student athlete.
Well, yeah, I have a couple of positions about that. One, if it's not safe enough to have students on campus, you can't have football players on campus. The purpose of going to college and playing football is to be a student. At least that's what the NCAA keeps telling us. They always say student athletes. The student goes before athlete. Well, if they're not on campus, if it's not safe for students to be on campus, it shouldn't be safe for football players or soccer players and whatever other fall sports might occur to be on campus. And there's a leadership problem here. This shouldn't be up to the conferences, because while obviously the preponderant majority of games are conference games for most teams, it is still a national game, and interconference games make up, say, 25-30% of every team's schedule, maybe even more, obviously in the case of Notre Dame and Brigham Young, all of the schedule. And so there should be some national leadership, and that's not occurring. I know that Emmert said today he's dubious about fall sports and we should maybe start them later and all that. That's not leadership. That's just theorizing. There are ways to handle this. Also, you know, Stanford's now had to say that it's going to eliminate quite a few non-revenue sports. I think a few other schools have done the same thing because of the lack of football revenue, which obviously drives the financial resources of most of the athletic departments. Well, how about if the NCAA got together and said, you know what, this season we're going to put a cap on head football coaches' salaries. Nobody can make more than $1 million a year, and all that savings is going to go to fund spring sports or non-revenue sports when we get back into a fully functioning NCAA year. You know, you'd save quite a bit of money. I mean, you know, you've got, you know, the Clemson coach makes, what, $10 million a year? $11 million a year? You know, Dabo Sweeney. So, you know, he can get by on $1 million this year, I would assume. Look, I don't want to give away, I don't think it's fair to give away anybody's money or right except in this extreme circumstance. You know, Nick Saban's obviously made a tremendous amount of money. You and I have had this conversation before. I think he's one of the three or four greatest football coaches who ever lived. You know, but if he sacrifices for a year to maintain the gymnastics program or the women's soccer program or the swim team or, you know, whatever's in jeopardy at the University of Alabama, that wouldn't be a terrible thing. I noticed that in Kentucky there was, I think, a justifiable and righteous attempt being made by the faculty now to remove Adolph Rupp's name from the arena. I mean, Adolph Rupp was a scourge. He was a racist. He was not a good guy. And I think it's an opportunity for the university to sell the naming rights, take Rupp's name off the arena, and, you know, sell the naming rights. It could become, well, Louisville plays in KFC Arena, so, you know, the University of Kentucky could play in Popeye's Arena, or it could play in, you know, if I'm in the horse racing business, as you know, and the Mattress Mac, Jim McElvain, you know, has put Run Happy's name on every event in horse racing, you know, and that's Lexington, so he can make a Run Happy Arena, and the money raised, the $2 or $3 million a year that would be raised, could save a lot of non-revenue sports at the University of Kentucky if it's dedicated to that, and put that together with the savings from Mark Stoops' salary and from John Calipari's salary. You know, both deserve the money they get paid, but in this circumstance, this is extreme circumstance, so they work for $1 million this year. I know it seems not fair, but because they have contracts, but that would be a great sacrifice for them to make in order to save all the other sports at the university. And I just think there's a lack of leadership, and there's a lack of creative thinking, and that there are ways to do the right thing for the students, and for the coaches and for the universities, without jeopardizing everybody and without jeopardizing the long-term existence of other sports, you know, because it's an athletic department problem. And I've heard an argument made, now this is a Northwestern thing, I've heard an argument made that, well, the reason why the coaches are so highly paid, where they get paid, the highest paid coach is generally paid 10 or 15 times more than the highest paid professor, is because they make more money through the university than any professor, which is kind of not true, but in the case of Northwestern, which I know is specifically not true, because two chemistry professors created in a Northwestern lab a drug called, I think, Levitra, and Northwestern University's take on Levitra, the university that went straight to the endowment, so, and don't forget, universities don't pay taxes, so all this money went right into the Northwestern University endowment, was $1.2 billion. Now, Pat Fitzgerald is probably the greatest coach in the history of Northwestern football, certainly the most successful. Probably not the greatest, because Eric Parsegian coached Northwestern before he went to Notre Dame. But he has definitely not made, in his years as the head coach, and will not make, even if he coaches for another 30 years, a $1.2 billion profit for the university, you know, even though it's a Big Ten football team. So that's not true that coaches always make more money than any professor. And that's true at other universities that where they have drug patents and other things. Stanford, Sun Microsystems, which was a big player, that stood for Stanford University Network. That's where the sun came from. It didn't have anything to do with what was in the sky. And that was a huge player in the Silicon Valley and, you know, made a lot of money for the university. So, you know, there's a lot of ways to look at the financial aspects of this. But most importantly, it's safety. And we don't know anything about what the long-term effects of being afflicted with coronavirus are. Nothing. We don't know if you're afflicted, if there's a long-term effect on your respiratory system, when how that will affect your stamina if you're an athlete. We don't know what its long-term effect is on organ function. There's now some talk that in certain cases it's attacked the brain and the neurological function of the body. So we're not just risking the short-term illness that an athlete might get, we're risking his long-term viability. So I would ask if it's worth it for baseball, football, college football, hockey, or the NBA to risk losing the careers of Zion Williamson and Mike Trout and Mookie Betts and Patrick Mahomes and any player you can think of, the Greek freak, Giannis Antetokounmpo.
David, I need to jump in because we're about to run out of time.
Okay, I didn't mean to go on.
No, it's quite all right. But I would love to go on. We'll do this again soon. Listen, thank you very, very much for coming on. I really appreciate it. It's always great to visit with you. Thank you, David. Thank you very much. We're up against a break. We almost ran over, but I'm glad we didn't. We'll take a short break. Back with much more.